take them and run. Take them and run down there. Show everybody the area.
And I'm here to tell you, madame, monsieur, mademoiselle, that sustainability is the red blood cell of civilization which will propel the future. Yet today, most journalists and laymen excel in discussing it lightheartedly over peanuts and pretzel. There is a ringing bell, however, a difficult truth, a pill that is hard to swallow, that most of this debate is hollow. Now, I don't want to be mean, but when people think green, they all choose between an apocalyptic spleen when they deem our end can be foreseen, or they put childish logic on the scene, where you can see the rainbow's beam, you can hear birds sing and children's laughter, and there is always a happy ever after. Energy is indeed the holy grail. But saving resources is not a fairy tale. And no, it's not enough to take a shorter shower. So don't expect me to show you pictures of huge traffic in a rush hour that smoothly change into wind, solar, or nuclear power. Let's get out of the sweet and cute tower and go to the first base, to the imaginary place without the rat race, where our grandparents were living at a slower pace, and each thing fell into place. They wrote nature in lower, not higher case, yet before, they cared about it so much more than any green-minded college sophomore whose grand floor is full of useless stuff and throwaway decor. Stuff he got when he went by car to the discount store, even though it was virtually next door. And later he takes the floor to advocate building wind plants offshore and yells that nature is something we're all responsible for. I don't want to deplore the involvement, but what I do abhor is that we buy not what we need, but what we can pay for, what we can afford. And in Doha and Copenhagen, I simply adored when the mighty declared, "That's a ship, we're all aboard." But when new technologies were explored and put on the drawing board, cutting on the superfluous was ignored. You fly every week, but you offset the footprint? I swear to Lord, we dived in and now we're cutting off the bungee cord. It's time for a critical review. We, the people, are greedy. We queue when we see buy one, get two for cheese fondue, beef stew, or baby shampoo. And we won't give up on comforts unless we have to, whether up in the jet set, or like me and you, down here in the ground crew. We all use the magnifying glass. We believe in grassroots movement. We praise the individual. Alas, people affect the environment as a mass. And if you wait for all the middle class from China to Alsace to start to recycle, to reach a critical mass, you're in an impasse, a deadlock, a stalemate. To count on the grassroots is to procrastinate. And this is not a debate on whether a human being is good, evil, or just a blank slate. But there is a way out of it. There is a gate, and it's not to dictate ambitious goals and then await a revolution. The solution is to observe behavior and to aggregate, to foresee, to adjust, to create, to produce just aid when we need just aid. When the sun starts to shine, when the wind starts to blow, we get an energy overflow. But do we use it? No. Because we all take shower, cook, and dine when back from work between 8 and 9. But we can refine heatless routines. Let's redesign it. Let's try a real-time price system based on current supply when the price goes down, when you can see blue sky. In energy, it's good to save and to put aside, but to manage well is to make coincide the high tide and the low tide on the demand and the supply side. Let me put this straight. These two don't have to be on a blind date because we are too smart to accept this fate.
Good morning. My name is Mark Clark, and I'll be the convener this morning. And we're going to be talking about sustainability all morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. We are a welcoming congregation. Whether you seek religious freedom or freedom from religion, you are welcome here. Regardless of your sexual orientation or gender identity, you're a valued member of this community. We do not exclude anybody for their racist or ethnic heritage, their age, ability, or education. We only ask that you respect one another according to the 7 principles that you can find on the back of your bulletin. To summarize, inclusion, freedom, and peace rule here. As we light the chalice this morning, we'd like to consider the words of Black Elk, a medicine man from the Oglala Lakota Nation in Wyoming. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw. For I was seeing a sacred manner, the shapes of all things in the spirit and the shape of all shapes, as they must live together as one being. So we're already to our opening hymn, number 175. We celebrate the web of life. Looks like I mixed things up just a little bit, but that's all right. We can adapt to this. Announcements are next. And I have one announcement, and that's to implore everyone to please come to the next UU workday next Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. We do a lot of outdoor work and a lot of indoor work, I think more outdoor than in typically. So if you can show up, please do bring some work gloves, a rake. Any sort of tools that you might use in your yard as well. So they usually get used up pretty good, or used quite a bit. So, and another announcement, Saturday, October 11th from 3 to 8 p.m. for pizza and beer dinner at Matt and Jen Campbell's house. There's an insert in the order of service that gives you all of the information, and it looks like they'd like you to RSVP through the Facebook event that they've created, or you can contact Alex Simpson or Matt and or Jen, wherever she is. So. Okay. It's now time for our joys and concerns. If you would like, please share with everyone a joy in your life or any concerns you may have. And please wait for the microphone before beginning your remarks.
Hello, everyone. Molly McGoy. You won't see us for a couple weeks. This next weekend, we will miss pizza and beer, unfortunately. We'll be in California for my sister-in-law Karen McGoy's wedding to her partner Rhonda Gavert, and we are just thrilled for them. And Buddy and Bobette aren't here today because they're so excited they have to do all kinds of packing before they leave, like tomorrow. So we're very, very excited about that, and we'll be heading out next week. And then the next week, my dad's family is having its first ever reunion in my entire life. So we'll be in Kansas City, being with my cousins and aunts and uncles from my dad's side of the family. So we're pretty excited. Thank you.
We had a real great joy that our daughter, who it looks like has beaten the lymphoma that she's had for 2 or 3 years, and we got a bus ride with Metalark to Minnesota in Minneapolis, and we had 3 days to see her smile and be alive and touch her, and it was beautiful.
Hi, Sarah Lott. Just wanted to welcome my friend Ryan, who's visiting us from Virginia, and we've been dragging him along to a bunch of other UU events. So I thank you all for being such a welcoming community.
Our daughter, Gloria, who is an atmospheric physicist, has been invited to be a fellow of the, what is it? American Meteorological Society. And we think that's a big deal.
For those joys voiced today and those known only to the one or a few, we rejoice with you. And for those concerns and sadnesses shared with us, and for those held in private, we offer support and thoughts of well-being. I think we've got the choir up next.
There will be a prize yet to be determined for who can figure out what the African slaves were thinking of that's related to green buildings as we sing a deep river.
Now it's time for a story of all ages, and Matt Campbell will delight us with a story.
All right. You guys ever read Mr. Tiger Goes Wild? Well, it's a little parable about, and we can apply it to what we need to do in the future with regards to sustainability. You'll kind of get it if you replace the word wild with green, kind of puts it in perspective a little bit better. So Mr. Tiger Goes Green, or wild. Everyone was perfectly fine with the way things were. Everyone but Mr. Tiger. Mr. Tiger was bored with always being so proper. Good day, Mr. Tiger. Good day, Mr. Deer. Lovely weather we're having, I suppose. Indeed. Now, children, please do not act like wild animals. Yeah. He wanted to loosen up. He wanted to have fun. He wanted to be wild and green. And then one day, Mr. Tiger had a very wild and green idea. There he is in a suit. Yeah. He felt better already. Mr. Tiger became wilder and greener and wilder each day. Roar, says the tiger. His friends did not know what to think. Peculiar. Wow. Unacceptable. And then Mr. Tiger went a little too far. His friends had lost their patience. Mr. Tiger, if you must act wild, kindly do so in the wilderness. What a magnificent idea! And off the tiger goes, so he ran away. Into the wilderness. Where he went completely wild and green. There he is. But Mr. Tiger was lonely. He missed his friends, he missed the city, and he missed his home. So Mr. Tiger decided to return. And found that things were beginning to change. Now Mr. Tiger felt free to be himself. And he did, and so did everyone else. And everyone became green altogether. The end.
One thing I always think after the offertory is that's always worth the price of admission. So, and it happened again this morning. So today we're talking about sustainability, and I'm just up here to give an introduction to it. And when I started researching that, I thought, well, that's probably going to be difficult to find much to talk about, even for a few minutes, as an introduction anyway. You know, 68 in the winter and 78 in the summer, and recycle and take shorter showers and things like that, drive an economical car, or walk or ride bikes or whatever. So I started doing research, and I was quickly overwhelmed with the avalanche of information, just at an introductory level. So I found something that is a little bit more detailed than I expected, but I didn't really know how to summarize it much better than this. So let me give this a shot, and hopefully it's a good introduction to Matt's much more in-depth and researched than what mine is. So in ecology, sustainability refers to how biological systems remain diverse and productive. Long-lived and healthy wetlands and forests are examples of sustainable biological systems. In more general terms, sustainability is the endurance of systems and processes. The organizing principle for sustainability is sustained development, which includes four interconnected domains: ecology, economics, politics, and culture. Those four things working together in tandem are obviously difficult at the best of times. So sustainability science is the study of sustainable development and environmental science. Healthy ecosystems and environments are necessary to the survival of humans and other organisms. Ways to reduce negative human impacts are environmentally friendly chemical engineering, environmental resource management, and environmental protection. Information gained from green chemistry, earth science, environmental sciences, and conservation biology. Ecological economics studies the fields of academic research that aim to address human economies and natural ecosystems. Moving towards sustainability is also a social challenge that entails international and national law, urban planning and transport, local and individual lifestyles, and ethical consumerism. Ways of living more sustainably can take many forms, from reorganizing living conditions, i.e. eco-villages, eco-municipalities, and sustainable cities, reappraising economic sectors, permaculture, green building, sustainable agriculture, etc., or work practices, sustainable architecture, as an example. Using science to develop new technologies, new green and renewable energy technologies, and adjustments to individual lifestyles that can conserve our natural resources. Those few things that I listed at the beginning that I thought that's what sustainability was at least mostly about. Despite the increased popularity of the use of the terms sustainability, the possibility that human societies will achieve environmental sustainability has been and continues to be questioned. In light of environmental degradation, climate change, overconsumption, and society's pursuits of indefinite economic growth in a closed system. So that's the introduction. So now we'll get to the heart of the matter. And so Matt Campbell writes that.
Hello and good morning. Like Mark said, my name is Matt Campbell, and I'm a member here. And the next question is, why am I up here getting ready to spew about sustainability? Well, I think the biggest qualification is that I'm willing to be up here and spew about sustainability. So, second, I am the facilities committee co-chair, and I felt as a member and the co-chair of the facilities committee that sustainability is something that we should take initiative as, from a building's perspective, is something that we can take to work towards who we are as Unitarian Universalists. And then evaluate our impact here at the U and act accordingly to live up to our mission. And lastly, I'm not a climate scientist or sustainability expert by any means. I had to learn a lot just to get up here. But I am a mechanical engineer, so I have some tools to help me do that. So initial effort for this service was to evaluate our building and evaluate our impact as a congregation on the world. So this is the first time I've really got down into some nitty-gritty details. And really, it's stark and amazing and scary when you start. And so even the past month, my behavior started to change because of what I've learned. So my goal today is to help convene some of that information so we can make better decisions and then to start a discussion on what to do. So this is by no means the final answer or the answer or the right answer, but I just want to get a conversation started because, as we'll see today, it's important to act now and fast in all of us. So to know what we need to do requires us to understand the problem. Many of us know some of the aspects. Many of us have a bird's eye view of it. A lot of us question, you know, should I not take a shower or ride my bike or turn off the lights when I'm not in the room? What's important? We have trouble figuring out what is best for us. So I want to help guide us to what we need to be doing. So I'll start from the top, and we're going to just start from climate change and work down into, you know, how much carbon does my fridge take. So I wanted to take a top-down approach because we need to understand the effects and where we need to go first. So I'll then present sources of greenhouse gas emissions from a global perspective. And once we're there, we can finally get to what I was after all along, is what we can do to make a difference. So we're going to focus on energy today because it turns out that our energy use is by far the biggest factor of climate change. And I'll get to that too. So my goals, educate just enough. I don't want to bore you with a whole bunch of science, but I like science, so we're going to do that. And then the second one is just start a discussion about what we can do. So here we go for the science lesson. It's short, but stay tuned. The Earth is naturally a sustainable place, at least in the time scale of thousands of years. So eventually it won't be sustainable because we're going to get hit by a meteor or something like that. But from the time scales we're concerned about, the Earth has taken care of itself in a sustainable manner. So there's processes such as the carbon cycle that keep these systems in check. And one of these important processes is the energy balance of the Earth. So all of our energy, whether it's oil, wind, has originally come from the sun. So the sun radiates heat, hits the surface of the Earth, and the Earth warms. When the Earth warms, it's going to radiate heat back out to outer space. So there's heat coming in, heat going out, and then we have the atmosphere to hold a little bit in to hold our temperatures more stable. What happens when you put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere is the light coming in still can come in, same amount coming in, except the radiative heat coming back out gets trapped. So it's a different wavelength. Water molecules, CO2, get trapped that heat. So really what happened, the factor of why we're temperatures are climbing is because there's more greenhouse gas. So we're getting the same amount of energy, we just can't release as much back to outer space. Pretty simple. So a higher abundance of greenhouse gas creates a higher equilibrium temperature of Earth. So how much can the Earth take? Well, it can take all that we give it. It's just what temperature are we going to be at that point? Is it livable? So what is the situation when we finally stabilize it? You know, average temperature of 1,000 degrees, probably not very good. That's a long ways off, so but we'll get more into those details a little bit later. So it's pretty simple. We receive constant thermal radiation, but what we're doing by putting water molecules and CO2 in the atmosphere is not emitting the heat out. So enough of the science lesson. Everybody understand kind of the system. It's a little important just to know enough about that. But all right, so let's get to some more important stuff. Here's the train of thought, essentially, with regards to energy and greenhouse gas emissions. And this train of thought hopefully will lead us to where we want to go with what we can do to make a change. So we're trying to avoid undesirable consequences of a warmer planet. You can argue what those are. That's not really what we're here today to do. On from that, greenhouse gases cause those warmer temperatures. So on from that, human behavior has caused unnatural amounts of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which has caused the warming. So our goal is to modify our behavior to prevent the accumulation of greenhouse gases, to prevent global warming, to prevent undesirable consequences. So this gets us To reduce these greenhouse gases, we need to understand and quantify where they're coming from, and then we can modify our behavior to reduce those emissions. So once we learn about this, we can choose what's effective, how much we need to do. And so when we get into that, when we go to that level, you get into fields of economics, sociology, and philosophy, and this gets very complicated because the changes we need are more than just turning off your lights. These are systematic changes as a culture, as a world, really. And when it gets scary, is the whole world's going to have to act. How often does the whole world agree on anything? It's going to be an issue. So without going into detail about how much excess greenhouse gas the Earth can handle, again, I'll tell you, it can handle it all. It's just, where is this balance of the temperature? So to get into some numbers, scientists have agreed, well, mostly agreed, that catastrophic consequences will occur if we reach 2 degrees Celsius, which is 3.5 degrees F above pre-industrial levels, average temperature. So, Alex, you want to... So we need to get that to a more tangible figure. So how much CO2 is that? Or how much greenhouse... CO2e, when I say CO2, it's usually CO2e equivalent. So this is all greenhouse gases. So they're saying 400... Give a second here. 450 parts per million is... So we're already in a dangerous stage, which was about 400. We're just over that at 2014. So now we're talking catastrophic consequences. How do we prevent that? So here's a... These are from ice cores in the Arctic. So essentially it's a time capsule. We can track back and estimate CO2 levels. So this is 10,000 years of history, starting with back at negative 8,000 years. So we can see that the... Let's see. So 300, 200, 50. So they oscillate a little. They have general trends as well. But look at the change in this general trend over 8,000 years. So here's 1750 is where a pre-industrial age ends. And look at our slope at this point. So something happened. What happened? We started burning fossil fuels. Consumption. So we're taking energy from the earth and burning it. Essentially, that's what's happening. So where is the CO2 coming from at this point? Well, this is 2008. China, USA, a good chunk, just two countries. So this is, think how we have about a third to a fourth of the people of China, and we're competing with them to, they actually overtook us in 2005. So they were, and we'll talk about that in a little bit in the next slide. So other countries, the whole European Union, 13%. India, 6%. So these two actually are decreasing, while India and China are increasing at a rate faster than we're decreasing. So that's the locations, countries consuming. It's pretty crazy, and it gets even more crazy. So here's, on a world scale, what are the sources of those greenhouse gases? So energy supply, this is mainly power plants, and a lot of it's coal. Forestry, this is things like deforestation, turning forests into crops and other things in cities. Agriculture, this is things like plowing the soil, and we get emissions of nitrous oxide and other things. So petrochemical, fertilization. Industry, this is things like manufacturing, so, and transport. So you can see on the world scale, these things are pretty evenly distributed. So if you cut one of these out, we're still consuming a lot. So how are we doing in the U.S.? Whoops. Okay, still in the world. Sorry. So here is our... This is a gigaton. Gigaton, which is a billion tons. And this is CO2, I think E. So in 2000, so 1990 it was the Kyoto Protocol. So this is, in 1970 is when we started getting concerned about climate change. We started to learn, it's probably even before that, but that's when we really, so it's been 40 years. 1990 was the Kyoto Protocol. And 2000 is the newest baseline because essentially we have to keep making new baselines because we're marching on out. So here's what we've done since. It's not slowed down much. So U.S. is the red. We actually have decreased our consumption a little, believe it or not, and that's mainly through efficiency and financial trouble. So was it on purpose? Probably not. So you can see in 2008, look at this, that's when we made a lot of, there's mainly two lines here. A lot of this gain was made when we had the financial crisis, and that was on accident. But it's good that we're not increasing. So what's the European Union doing? They also decreased. You can see they got hit in 08 as well. They have a downward slope. India, going the other direction, and look at China. Crosses in 05 for total consumption. Look how this, look at the green China track total emissions. So there's other countries like China, say Indonesia, that are on, we would call third world countries. So they were, per capita, still produce less than us, but there's so many people that it's taking control of the total emissions. So per capita, this gives a little bit of an idea. We are, this on this chart, we are the highest, but we're actually not per capita. Australia is above us. They don't have very many people. There are some other places, UAE maybe, living in the desert's pretty taxing. So you come down, so we're at, this is in 2002, I believe. This is reduced a little to 18, so we're at 19 or 20 per, 19, this is, what's the unit here, tons per capita. So this is tons of CO2 produced per year per person, 20 tons. What is someone in China in 2002? This is in 2002. China is now on the 7 tons. So China has tied, per capita is equal with the European Union, per capita. Where are we? We've gone from 20 to 18. So here's a high income average, so that'd be kind of the West, I guess. World average, 3 and 4 tons per capita per year. Low-income average. So this is not American low-income. This is like Africa low-income. They're below 1. So I've drawn a blue line here. It's my own. This is the long-term target per capita. 2. We've got to go from 20 to 2. And we'll get into what that takes here in a second. It's a long ways. We don't have to do it now, but we have to. The faster we do it now, the easier it's going to be. So this is essentially a 2050 target. So we hit 2 at 2050. We're still going to spike at 475 parts per million in the atmosphere, and we'll stabilize at 400 and 2150. This is the time scales we're talking about here. This is the best case scenario. We're not stabilized until 2150 year. So let's get to the U.S. a little bit deeper. Where does our consumption? So there's sectors here. Transportation, this is driving cars, trains, planes. Industry, this is producing goods. Some of this is actually producing energy. If the industry, this is emissions at the place of consumption. So a lot of this is not, this isn't necessarily like every cup you buy is, so they're producing energy too. So this is kind of, a lot of people produce their own energy. And so this is residential, commercial. So you can see there's three major factors. We're our transportation, the things we produce, and living and working environments. So agriculture is, I mean, if we want to attack agriculture, we can. Take that completely out. You're only going to make it we got to eat. I mean, you're not going to take 10% out. So all those combined, what are the emissions? So these are common greenhouse gases. We all know carbon dioxide. A lot of us are familiar with methane. This is about 21 times worse than carbon dioxide, but so this is equivalent. So there's not 9% of methane. It's actually probably more like 1% methane, but they're a lot worse greenhouse gas. And then same said for nitrous oxide and fluorinated gases. But look at this. Carbon dioxide is 82%. So CO2 equivalent. So essentially they're making these equivalent. So CO2 is the driving factor. And it's all coming from energy. This is all the energy use. So where does that energy come from? Why is the CO2? This is a little bit of a complicated chart, so I'll try to be clear here. The left side is sources. Right side is, if you look here, this is uses, and this is waste. So we take petroleum, we drive our cars, it gets converted to heat. 5.6 out of 27 gets used to make us go, and 21% of that heat is rejected. So look at these streams again, how big they are. Coal goes up to energy, electricity production. So we're all the electricity sources together produce 38 quads, which is a quadrillion BTUs. So it's a lot, I guess, is what to take from that. But so just look at this 38. So only 12 out of 38, so that's efficiency of about 25% of that heat is getting used to actually do things. The rest is being rejected. So we're producing heat. The heat buildup isn't the problem. So don't worry about, this is just waste. So we need to get more efficient. The heat is not what's making the earth warm. It's the sun and us trapping the sun's energy that's making it warm. So natural gas. So we've got petroleum, coal, and natural gas. Huge streams. Solar makes up, what is that number? 0.32 of 38. Of that, this is, I think, U.S. energy, yeah. Small amount. This next chart is CO2 from these sources. Petroleum, biggest stream. Coal actually grew because coal ends up being dirtier than both petroleum and natural gas. And so look at the zero. Here's what we need to increase. So that gives you a little bit of the idea of energy use from a global, then national. So let's get down to what our building and our homes, where do we need to go? Oops, sorry. All right. So this is where I started, and I had to back up because you'll see why in a second. So we have a 6,100 square foot building. These numbers, don't worry if you don't understand them. This is just amount of electricity, amount of natural gas. I'm trying to get to a point where you just look at numbers. So we're gonna end up at tons of CO2, kind of like those other. This is about two times of it. Our building runs about two homes, which makes sense. We have 6,100 square foot. Problem is it's only occupied 30% of the time. So there's some room to gain here. I mean, we have a 63 out of 100 ENERGY STAR score overall. Not sterling, but it's not terrible. So we're using 42.8 kilobtu per square foot per year. National average is 37. Our region average is supposedly 35, but one region to the north is 61. So it kind of puts it in. So heating your building we consume three times more energy in natural gas than we do in the rest of our stuff. So heating, that's all that we have natural gas for, is heating our building. I had another. Oh, but even though we use three times the natural gas that we do of electricity, we produce the same amount of CO2 with electricity and than natural gas. So what does that say is, in our state, producing this electricity is by coal and very dirty. So natural gas, even though we're using more natural gas, this amount of CO produced, which is actually the goal here, is the same. So we can do three times the amount of natural gas and have the same impact as our electricity generation. So what does that say? We need to create energy that doesn't create CO2 or use less. Actually, we need both. So 24.2 tons per year is what we're creating here at the UU. And that's based on natural gas and electricity. So let's say we make some changes, we spend some money, we reduce this. So that's only, there's 100 members here, so if we all make one change, that's 100 times more effective than doing a change here. So the UU is not our problem. It provides us a place to come and talk about these things. That's what's important. So let's get to our homes and why I think that making a change here is less important. This is for U.S. You, as our average here is probably less than this, but you got to remember this average includes people living in the city which don't have cars and live in apartments. So if you own a house and a car, you're more average than you think you are. Look at this chunk of CO2. Remind you, this is household, so this is 2.66 people. Motor vehicle fuel is 9 tons alone. We need to get to 2 by 2050. So I'll start cutting things and we'll see. So we got to get to 18. So we take 9 divided by 3 people. So we're over our limit if we just drive a car around and do nothing else. This is an average car, 22 miles per gallon. So if you have a Prius, it's double the efficiency. Still has an impact. Indirect fuels, this is things like, I believe it's the transportation to get goods to your house, shipping, things like that. So just manufacturing your car takes 1 ton of CO2. Air travel's about 2. That's on average, so... this is per household. So divide by 2.66 if you want to get your personal one, and I do that later here. And electricity, the next big chunk from motor vehicles. So transportation, look at our transportation cost. Housing, next big cost. So natural gas heating our houses. The reason this electricity is so big is because we're producing electricity using coal, which is dirty. So if we can produce wind and solar, this goes down considerably. So we can have the same, if we produce clean energy, we can use the energy without producing CO2, which is the goal here. So food, actually a pretty significant portion of our, again, this is 8 divided by 2.66, so we're at 2 per person. So that's our limit. If we just eat, we're at our limit based on the systems we use now. Goods and services. So you can see there's an issue here. Where do you start cutting? So let's cut some things out. We're going to drive half the distance or double our efficiency. That's a savings of 3,000 pounds. Right there, huge, huge effect. Let's produce a third of our energy with solar. So let's put solar panels up. Third, I think that's realistic. That's another 1,800 pounds. That's significant. Make your home super green. This stuff starts to get expensive. Lights aren't. Weatherizing depends. Setbacks is free. Set your temperature back a few degrees. You're going to save a lot of energy. So we're still doing all, get Energy Star appliances, et cetera, et cetera. We're still only saving 1,500. Eliminate meat completely. 1,200 pounds of CO2. Eliminate gas. Don't even heat your house. Yeah, so... This gives you a little bit of idea. So we do all of these things, We don't even have health care. We don't have air travel. We don't have heating. We're still over 8 per capita. So that puts us in line with China. Gives you an idea of the things we consume. I mean, we have a very comfortable life. And we're still above the EU. So how do the EU, I mean, they have similar lives to us. How do they do this? Well, a lot of it is with not traveling as much when they're in their motor vehicles. It's about nuclear energy. It's about clean energy. They have a lot more, made a lot more progress than us. And really, the biggest is living close to what they do. That's the biggest impact. So even cutting our driving in half, we're still over. We still have 3,000 pounds per person. So just to put it in perspective, so this is a setback, turn AC from 74 to 78, you're going to save 500 pounds. I mean, wouldn't you rather just get solar energy? You can save a lot more. So microwave. Let's not use our microwave. That's only 170 pounds out of tons. Don't worry about it. Use your microwave. Fridge, 200 pounds. Dryer, 350. I mean, this is chump change. Actually, these can add up. You have 50 of these in your house. But, so now I say these are chump change. What we need to do the things that are easy. I mean, things that are free, like setbacks, that doesn't affect you that much. So turn your AC when you leave the house, turn it off. Can have an effect without very much impact on your life. So, but what I'm trying to show here is the difference between these numbers and these numbers and these numbers. So we have a long ways to go. So what are the effective actions? Number one thing is reduce gasoline consumption. And a month ago I didn't know this information, I'll be honest. Bicycle is probably the best thing you can do for the environment, as long as you're not driving too. But I mean, so efficiency does a lot too. If you double your efficiency, it's just the same as driving half. That's why Priuses are popular and need to be. So next biggest, so that's the biggest one. We just need to stop using gasoline. Electricity. We need to figure out how to produce electricity without emissions, which Mark Mosher will tell you, there's ways to do that. We're just not doing it. The biggest problem with this is we're not willing to pay for it. Coal is cheap. Gas is cheap. Yeah, solar's getting cheaper. Still, right now it's a matter of quantity. So we have to reduce and produce. It's not, you can't do one or the other. You can't reduce or switch to green energy. We have to essentially hit it from both directions. Next thing, reduce the consumption. So I have it right there. Energy efficient appliances, lights, AC setbacks. Not living in Phoenix, things like that. Next, do the easy stuff. Do the stuff that doesn't affect you. So get new lights, get Energy Star appliances when you can, weatherize, setbacks, buy food locally. I mean, some of these things are going to cost you money, but you got to judge. So there is a book put out by the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's essentially the Consumer's Guide to Their Footprint. What you can do, and I didn't get it yet. So if you want to talk to me about what you think you want to do, that's what I want. I'll start this discussion because I'm learning along with you here. So carbon offsets. There was a little blurb about that at the beginning. It's better than nothing. I mean, we're not going to get there only with carbon offsets. We've got to reduce, but there. In the short term, if we can do something, we should do it. So I'm for carbon offsets, and that makes me for nuclear power too. Long term solution, I don't think nuclear is good, but we need carbon offsets. Okay, so we have a per capita load on the environment. And we have an option to offset that load by buying, essentially buying investment in things like clean energy, reforestation projects. So you are essentially donating money to a project that's going to put wind power in China or reforest the Amazon. So there's calculators online that you go, you calculate how much your impact is. This is popular with air travel. You calculate how much CO2 you produce and you offset it back by buying clean energy. So does that help? Yes. Does it solve the problem? No, we're still, this is just a temporary remediation tool. Same thing with nuclear. Nuclear doesn't produce CO2, but it produces other problems. But we're getting to a point where we're going to have to pick the lesser of the evils. And then at the bottom, most important, by a landslide, is convince others, your neighbor in China, to change too. These things, the problem is this is by far the most important, but also by far the hardest to do. Advocate systematic change. We have to live differently. We have to create our energy differently, and we have to travel differently. So this is where this conversation becomes political, becomes economic, becomes psychological, becomes philosophical, everything. I mean, this is... So, Union of Concerned Scientists, which is accumulation of scientists, highly educated, Harvard. I started at MIT. I don't think it was... Maybe started for climate change, but... So the goal is a global reduction of 60% by 2050. And the problem is we're not reducing now, and we're creating more people. So their proposal, which is realistic but optimistic, we would peak in 2010. So this is kind of it peaked in 2010, and reduced by 2% average till 2050. But this is average, means we have to do 4 now, especially since we're behind. And then our goal as an industrialized country be 80% below 2000 levels. So that's where I get that 2 from, 2 out of 20. So large developing countries, because they were producing so much less per capita, they have to be, this is a kind of a fair type thing. They peak in 2020 and start reducing 2% average per year until 2050. So there is hope. We are not in catastrophic, but we're headed towards it. We need to do something. So even with this plan, we'll peak at 475, which is above the threshold, but we'll stabilize around 400 in 2150. So this gives you a scale of the problem. This is why we can turn off the lights and use our bags at the grocery store. But if we don't address this politically, then there's no hope. Essentially, Tom Manny pointed me to a book by Naomi Klein. She's very well researched. She's more stark than I am. She's pretty much saying that we're going to have uprising, kind of. I guess Tom had some quotes, but... This changes everything. Yeah. So, got some... Let's have a discussion. I know, I want to hear from you guys, too. I hope I wasn't too hard on everybody. I'm there with you, because I've made decisions that don't support this, but now I'm learning, so don't feel too guilty. So let's hear from. Yeah, well, okay.
You didn't address methane released by fracking. When I go out to Western Kansas, where I grew up, I went to Monument Rocks, and around it within a quarter mile, there are these little, I don't know if they're pumping fracked natural gas or oil, but methane, well, there we go.
Well, here, I've got an even better
methane
one.
Methane is much worse than CO2, so, yeah, so is there, even if we control this, can you address that for me, please?
Yeah, so methane is worse. It's 21 times worse greenhouse gas, but there's so much less of it. So that's why we use CO2e. It can directly compare it. So let's do this. So total, when I say greenhouse gas emission, that's everything. Look at our fuel is 5,700 fuel consumption. This goes like way out here. 85% of greenhouse. So should we be concerned about methane? Yes. So methane is the second highest factor. Still only 8.2% of our problem. And 25% of that's from cows. So and that's a total of what, 2%? So the cows as a 2% issue as far as greenhouse gas emission. Small. Still a factor. Okay. So I don't know if fracking is on here. Natural gas systems. See, it's small. It's important, but there's way, way, way more important things. Okay.
I'm so glad that you started this conversation, and I think you've been far too mild because it's the fate of the planet and everything on it. And water is a huge component in this as well. And so those of you who want to start educating yourself, I have a big list of books that you probably ought to read. You ought to read Richard Heinberg, The Party's Over, Power Down. Robert Monbiot has a website. He's the expert in the UK. Paul Kingsnorth is somebody that we encountered in our reading group, and he takes a philosophical approach. Until we change our thinking, we can't globally come together to address these issues. The Age of Stupid, a documentary by Franny Armstrong, is at the Manhattan Public Library, and it gives you a very clear picture of what our situation really is and what people's attitudes are. Then also, Last Call at the Oasis addresses the real water problem and the water wars that we are currently now facing. And this is all related to climate change. So I also recommend that our fellowship join the resiliency group that some of us are already in. We put solar panels on people's houses. We can put solar panels on this building. So thank you so much for starting the conversation.
So I didn't address water at all. This was totally just energy. There's way... Go ahead, Mark. There's other concerns, soil quality, killing it, but this was based on greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, I can be quick and contribute more to my unpopularity by saying if we're really serious about this, we have to tax the hell out of things that send CO2 into the air, and that means that gasoline at, $10 or $15 a gallon. It means higher utility bills. If you really want to influence people's behavior.
Yeah, that's...
And as I say, I'm not in this business to make friends, but it would be uncomfortable. But it's all of those other things are peeing in the ocean.
Exactly.
Compared to what you can accomplish by just making a lot of things more expensive and people will do fewer of them.
Right, and we need that money to do it more green. I mean, it's going to cost us. I mean,
okay. Hi, my name is Jocelyn Binkley. This is my first time here. I just want to say it was very refreshing coming and hearing this conversation. I am a student at K-State, and I'm studying economics and international studies, and I'm also on the leadership team for K-State Students for Environmental Action. And so that's why I'm here today. I wanted to just extend an invitation to you guys if you're interested in learning more. We are actually doing a documentary tonight. We're showing a documentary on the environment and kind of talking a little bit about our organization. on campus. If you want to catch me afterwards, I can invite you to that. And then also every Friday we do real food lunches on, it's kind of on Anderson and Denison. And with that, we kind of talk about how to buy more locally, how to eat more sustainably. And it's just a really great group of professors and students, and just a very nice group, diverse group of people around the community. So if you guys are interested in that, I think that's a great way just to learn more about eating sustainably. So.
I think some of us may have missed the very important on the bottom of that, where it said politics. If you are not registered to vote, go register to vote. We need to get people into office that are not climate deniers, that are holding us back from doing this. And anybody that thinks that we can't afford to do this, we can't afford not to, because in about 50 years, we'll be spending trillions to combat what we're doing now. It's like, let's change the oil in your car so you don't have to buy an engine later.
All right.
Well, one more, why not?
Bryce Hobrock. There was a cartoon in the paper this morning that said it all. There is no Planet B.
Yeah, that's good. You know, thanks, thanks, Matt. You've opened all of our eyes. So maybe next week we can make it easy on the program committee and just continue this conversation. We don't have to plan another service. So maybe we might be going to a little bit of that model later, actually. So stay tuned for that. So we'll do our closing hymn and then go have coffee and conversation. Number 309, Earth is Our Homeland. right. Thanks, everyone. Let's go have some coffee.